All right, last hour on a Tuesday edition of Sharp Betting in the Morning. Shorts and hoodie weather. Oh, it is glorious. It is also glorious to talk to our man, the man, the myth, the legend, Brian Christopherson from Husker 24/7 joins us now on Sharp Betting in the Morning on the Les Hills Harley-Davidson Hotline. All right, we're taking off speakerphone. Did you hear that?
BC's getting professional. Yeah.
Hello, BC.
Hello.
Hello, you got
Hello?
Us?
You there?
Do I sound all right?
Yeah, you're good.
You sound fine. We caught you.
nice entrance.
Okay. Yeah, he said hello.
Yeah, I think we caught you a second early making the transition.
BC, how often are you called BC as opposed to Brian?
Most of the time now. Probably most of the time. There's a few people close to me that they don't even call me Brian. If I ever hear that. Yeah. You ever hear your first name?
Yeah, nobody calls me Damon.
I mean, I do, I think, sometimes on here. But, I'm probably like one of six people that might call you Damon, I bet.
Well, that's just because you're a professional. You probably wouldn't if we were like, at the, press box or you're back.
That's true. Yeah. That's something you do in like that formal setting. Like it's one of those like things you would learn in Toastmasters or something about how to speak. Use the person's name as an answer, and it sort of like gives it gravitas or something. I don't know. But very few people call me Brian.
Put gravitas on the bingo card?
Name,
does your wife call you BC?
No. Okay. No. She doesn't call me anything.
Okay.
Well, I mean, just like it's like, hey, you kind of communicate. You just see each other in the room. That's how you communicate.
Sup.
Yeah.
Hey. Sup. Okay. All right. Now that we've cleared that up,
we've got the pleasantries out of the way.
Yeah. Any quick takeaways from the depth chart that was released yesterday? I mean, sometimes when a depth chart is released, it's like, oh boy, no changes. There's a lot of ors. Yesterday there were changes at a couple of positions on both sides of the ball. Anything stand out to you that will be of interest today to talk to Mickey about, and of course on Saturday night?
Well, they're getting pretty thin on options on the O-line, I think. Of just even the names. We thought they were kind of inconsistent to begin with who's working there, but now even the names are dwindling. You don't see Kevin Williams' name on there, and presumably injuries have hit that spot pretty good. And then you've got Ethan Piper, it seems like going to be back in a main role. He was first on the depth chart at left guard. And obviously he's a guy who, a couple of years ago, the thought was that was his spot. And maybe he was going to take off and own that spot for about 3 years. And there were some inconsistencies from him, and he kind of got dinged up along the way. And then Nuili took off last year. When you think about the offensive line story, even since the spring, they've really been dented in like all the worst ways. I mean, like the thing you were maybe most optimistic about back in the spring was if Nuili and Prochaska could come back from that injury and they could be a nice tandem on the left side. Like we got a glimpse of it last year for a game or two. But you're like, okay, that looked all right. Maybe if they can really build on that, you feel good about that side, and then you're really working with something. And obviously, Nuili's not available because of the suspension, and then the Prochaska. It felt like he was always sort of struggling with his previous injury mentally, and then he gets a different injury. So, yeah, this is just—it's just been the apple cart keeps getting tipped over, it feels like. And now you're going to need some guys who are veterans. Like Piper's a veteran of this program now. They just got to step up and show this is their time and take advantage of it. So that stood out the most. I guess Omar Brown, sliding in at nickel behind Gifford on the depth chart is kind of interesting to see if maybe he finds his way onto the field more. Malcolm Hartsog was on there, and not as like a first-team guy, but that was kind of interesting to me that he popped up as a first-year corner and at least got his name on there.
All right, so full disclosure, BC, I tried all off-season to kind of get you to delve into the secondary. And it's not just you, it was other guys, because I wanted to know, for my own sake, if I was way off or not with the new bodies coming in, you know, Kane Williams or Moore, you know, guys that had been in the program that weren't coming up, because I fought this in my head. So I asked you rational people. I'm like, development in the secondary has been good. Mm-hmm. Guys have kind of grown and matured, but I was deathly afraid of losing a couple of safeties and a really good player like Cam Taylor-Britt. So I always asked you guys about the secondary. Is it to the point now where you guys are kind of, we are surprised at the lack of guys that have kind of come to the forefront out of a group that has so many scholarship numbers? Or is there something wrong, do you think, in terms of the learning mechanisms that's not allowed them to function at the level that the numbers would dictate?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but it hasn't been what it needs to be. And the fact that they were bringing in, like, everybody's in the portal now going into the summer, but they even brought in Brandon Moore, mm-hmm. sort of, you know, out of nowhere, like in mid-August. I mean, and now he's a backup corner. Like, he's listed as a backup corner right now, and he just got here. And I know he had played for them at UCF back in the day, and really kind of a nice individual story. I don't want to just throw water on it. I mean, he came back from a serious injury and is trying to revive his football career, and he might end up playing some now. But that, to the bigger picture question, that tells you sort of they weren't, I don't think, feeling as good back there as maybe at least it was shown on the surface, or like put forth on the surface of how it was going to be or what they thought. I think behind the scenes there was definitely some concern, and probably certainly about the safety spots. I don't know that they thought they would struggle quite as much as they have. That was one of my biggest worries all off season, was people downplaying Markell and Deontay and what they meant as just reliable every down, hey, they're going to do their job guys. And I always took the thought that I was thinking maybe they do have higher ceiling guys throughout their secondary in that room right now, but are they going to all like find that or get close to that ceiling right away, or, you know, in this first year where it's so pivotal with all that was on the line for Frost and that staff? I sort of was a little skeptical of that, but I thought they'd be better. I did. I don't want to act like I really thought, Tommy Hill's had some growing pains for no doubt about it, and he's got to prove he can be a physical corner, sort of like Quentin Newsome had to do last year. And, all those guys have got to step up. I think Marquise Buford is a guy who's going to keep working, and he could be a guy by next year if he gets, continues to get good teaching, who you would say is a can do your job all the time guy. But there need to be others like him, and I don't know how many are back there right now. It feels like somebody new at some point is going to have to step up. I noticed Jaden Gold's name popped up at safety on the depth chart, third guy on his, guys like that sort of get lost and you don't hear a lot about them. And that's you almost at the end of the season, you wonder if a name or two like that could, at least we could see them on the field and do some stuff. That would be kind of encouraging.
How do you handle a guy like Phelan Sanford, who has turned out in the last couple of years to be a good football player, and he's got trust of his coaches because they put him out in some key situations. But at first glance, Phelan Sanford should not be ahead of a guy like Noah Pola-Gates, but we know what NPG's career has been like here. So how in your mind do you balance, okay, hey, good for a guy like Phelan Sanford walks on and he's elevated to where he's playing quality minutes over a guy who was a major win in Nebraska's recruiting class, that was one of their highly ranked players that they brought in, that hasn't seen the field on a consistent basis?
Well, you got to play the guy who's doing it better in practice and who understands the stuff. I mean, you do have to do that. You have to be fair to your room, because if you aren't that way, then no one's going to trust you. Those guys tend to understand why they are where they are for the most part. Once in a while, you'll get an example of guys who don't, but I bet you most guys in that room get it. And, Phelan Sanford, I would say this about him too. He was a pretty freak athlete. I mean, he like was one of those guys who was testing, you know, top 10 and all that stuff they were putting out last year. So he can move around pretty well out there, use old Solich speak. But I don't know. It comes down to at that position to me mostly, like, who are the guys who know their stuff the most where you feel like you're not going to get dented by just brain freezes? You know, like, that's as big as anything right now, especially at that safety spot. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying about Deontay and Markell. That's what you took for granted when you have safeties who have been doing it together for 2 or 3 years, and by that second or third year, they feed off each other well. You're a defense where if a team drives it on you, they have to do it through 11, 12 plays. They're not going to get you once or twice a game for that 48-yarder where, you know, your safety and corner are looking at each other kind of with their hands up, like, well, it was your fault, my fault, you know, that sort of thing. That wasn't around a lot the last couple years when they were here. And now you're seeing that kind of pop up in occasions for this defense, which is just adding to the fact that they're, you know, when you have a bad run defense to go with it, you don't have much working for you. But I get why you put Stanford second if he's the guy who's earning it. And I think over the week they probably told some guys, we're going to look at this again, and you know, we might shift things around, but we're gonna put people where we think they belong, and that's it. And there you go right now. So it just has never really taken off for Noah Pulla Gates for one reason or another. He was a great athlete, wasn't always the biggest guy, but he's always sort of been fourth or fifth safety, and at this point you wonder if that's going to change in his career.
Hey, so BC, how much of and I'm going to say this at the risk of sounding silly, because there's nothing complacent about 16-31, but when you start rattling off names of guys that left, like Daniels and Williams and Dismuke and Doman, some mainstays, how much do you think Nebraska thought defensively, well, because we have, we still should? And it wasn't like that once those guys were gone.
Yeah. Those guys were better than a lot of people realized, and I think some guys, we maybe coaches too, oversold how far along they were in comparison with those guys. You know, like how far like a Tommy Hill still has to go to be even close to like the reliability of Cam Taylor Britt and how he could take out a guy on a given week. Like, I know Cam would have some mishaps here and there, but think about it. They could put Cam on like Jahan Dotson. Jahan Dotson was a great receiver.
He's playing on Sundays.
Yes. I mean, he's that caliber of guy. And Cam could X him out of a game sometimes for like a half or almost the whole game. He did that kind of to David Bell in the one game where they switched off. And you remember the game they won at Purdue. During the 20-year, Bell had the one catch where they collided, and it ended up giving him a nice stat sheet. But they did a nice job on him for almost that entire game where they were all like 5-yard catches and all that stuff. Point being, I think we probably, I don't know, I did to some degree, but I think the coaches more importantly did to some degree, thought some of their guys who are younger could get closer to where those guys last year were in a quick amount of time, and it just hasn't happened. And the one guy I would say that I was definite that was going to hurt them that was gone was Daniels. And I just, all offseason, I kept thinking, like, I know it took a lot of time for Damian Daniels to get to where he got, but by last year, that guy was a sturdy middle-year D-line guy that was just could eat up stuff and feed your linebackers, and was another underappreciated guy for how good of a college football player he was, like a Big Ten college football player. And still he's the same way.
Yep.
I mean,
I'm glad you brought him up.
Yep.
Darn near could have been on the 53.
And could get you lined up in a front if nobody else was, right? Which has happened to Nebraska multiple times this year where they weren't even in the right front.
Get old, stay old.
You know what? Still he's an example of, though. He got – on the field pretty early in his career, and he was pretty solid early in his career, and he kind of always stayed solid, but because he wasn't like a first or second team All Big Ten guy, which was maybe he didn't deserve it individually, but also you're on a team that has a bad record, so you're just not going to get the benefit of the doubt with that sort of stuff. But because he never rose to that, people kind of looked at him and like, whatever. He left, you know. That's a Big Ten defensive lineman,
yeah.
You know. And those are exactly the type of guys that you have to have a fighting shot in this
great
league,
point.
To have good run defense, all that stuff. And it could bring you to another question, though, of have we seen too many of those guys who are sort of just solid at Nebraska, and we just sort of think, well, they're all right, but I don't even know if they'll make it in the league. And then suddenly those guys are undrafted free agents who are fighting for, and they almost make a 53, or they do make a 53. And it makes you go back to that development question at Nebraska somewhat, where they didn't really jump off the page here, but suddenly at the next level they're making some noise. We've seen that with offensive linemen. We could name off four or five offensive linemen who have been like that. Stilley's an example. So, that could be another topic unto itself.
Well, so the get old, stay old. 18 offense was old. 21 defense was old. They were both serviceable units, not at the top of the league or anything. But all between, Nebraska really never got old again. They never, you know, it's always, hey, they've got 70% of the roster is underclassmen. The guys that have been in the program that were 5 and 6 year seniors definitely helped out last year. Let's talk about Indiana. Are we looking at, you know, now it looks like in college football of how crazy it's been through 4 weeks, some five, we're having rock fights or shootouts. Are we looking at, if Nebraska's to win, which would be highly suggestible on Saturday night, are we looking at a Georgia Southern-type shootout, in your opinion, 45-42-ish, with these two defenses, which are at the bottom of the Big Ten?
Well, I mean, that's sort of what your first guess is. And you then sometimes when you do that, it ends up going the opposite. But, I mean, this Nebraska defense has given us no reason, really, to suspect. I mean, I know there's a change going on, so we'll see what Bill Bush can get done and what exactly they do differently. But he's got a tall task ahead of him. The biggest thing of interest to me is Mickey talking about the tempo. And, he said, we're going to slow it down. That's interesting because it's a tightrope, and Damon could probably speak better to it as being in the coaching profession of, like, when you – actually sort of excels in offense with pace, like Nebraska sometimes does. I think sometimes they do pretty well with it. And now you feel like you got to take that away or throttle it down to help the other side of the ball. That just feels like an interesting balancing act that they're going to have to pull off here. But I understand it. This defense needs it for the rest of this conference season, but especially this week. I mean, Indiana snapped the ball 104 times against Cincinnati.
Yep.
And you cannot have this Nebraska defense on the field for 98 snaps or something in this game, but they're a tough team to avoid playing a lot of reps against because they will snap it. Forget what their plays per minute count is, but they're number one in the country. Indiana is in plays per minute. So that's sort of the sidebar to this game is tempo. And Nebraska's obviously got to be very good on third down, you know, to sort of to keep those drives going where you avoid those like back-to-back 87-second drives where you just put your defense right back out there.
BC, you realize or do you think we realize that Indiana had they had 628 yards total offense against Cincinnati?
You know what? They lost that game. That was the game where I was like, oh boy. I actually, the first three games they won, I was sort of like putting my hand out at them, like, whatever, this, you know, those were sort of, they should have not have beat Illinois. That's a game Illinois is still.
Oh, they're
beat.
Still kicking like, themselves.
Yeah. Illinois is a decent team, by the way. They play some defense, but Yeah, Illinois shouldn't have lost that game. But Indiana, sort of, they came back against Idaho, then they won in overtime with a late drive against Western Kentucky. And, I mean, a win's a win now in college football these days, especially when you're Indiana trying to build up from a two-win season last year. But this last week, I was watching near the end of the first half, and they fell behind 38-10, and you're sort of like, yeah, they are exactly who I thought they are. And then they came back, and they really kind of controlled the second half against Cincinnati. I don't know if it was because of the score or whatever, but I was it kind of knocked me back, and I gave them – I upped their respect points for them a little bit just by watching them in a 21-point loss, as odd as it seems.
BC, we appreciate it as always. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks, B.
It's Brian Christopherson. FanDuel has it 5.5 still. Nebraska is a favorite in this game. So going from 2.5 to 5.5.
It seems like a lot.
Yes.
Remember I said 12.5 for Oklahoma K-State isn't enough?
Mm-hmm.
This seems like too many.
Indiana, last in scoring defense and pass defense, or 13th in pass defense, scoring defense, and total defense. Nebraska's last in total defense, giving up 514 yards.
Yeah, so what's the total then? 60?
The total for this game is 59.5.
I almost nailed
it. So it won't be, you know, if you're doing the math, if you're doing the good public school math, Georgia Southern, 87 points were scored in that game. That is much higher than 59.5. For all of my teachers out there, see, you taught me well.
Hey, so let me ask you this, since we're playing Guess the Line, as I'm looking this up real time. What is the Purdue-Minnesota line?
It's 10.5.
It is 12.
Okay, so it's gone. It's now so it was released initially on the first release this summer was 7.5, and it's gone. It was out at 9.5 or 9 Sunday.
What is Michigan State, Maryland?
On the road, Sparty, 4-3 since Mel Tucker got paid. I will say that Michigan State is a 6.5 point favorite.
Maryland is a 7 point favorite.
Whoa.
7.
Hello. Okay. All right.
Would you like to take a stab at Rutgers and the Ohio State?
34.
It is 40. And as you referenced, Michigan and Iowa is holding steady. That's is that on Ambassadors?
Hold
unsteady.
On.
Hold on to me.
Ex-Ambassadors.
Because I'm a little... Yeah, ex-ambassador. Very good. Jimmy Choo,
not
you
sure
know,
how I
you
know
your music. And then Wisconsin and Illinois is a healthy 7 for Wisconsin and Madison.
So now Iowa has played Michigan 3 times, 16, 19, and 21. They haven't scored a touchdown against Michigan in 10 quarters. Yeah. But remember...
The total is only 42.
But remember when ranked teams of late come into Kinnick Stadium, what happens? They get beat.
It's hard.
Iowa's won 5 of the last 6. Hey,
so
you,
Iowa wins 8-7 on 4 safeties?
Well, it's 11 o'clock, too. Will Iowa City respond? I'm thinking they will.
Yeah,
they will.
Because it'll be – yeah. You know, they get – these are the kind of games that fan base embraces.
Mm-hmm.
Kegs and eggs.
Yeah. Kegs and eggs.
Adam Kramer, nice guy.
That.
Here's one other thing to look at. What is Colorado State playing this weekend?
The Rams? I do not know, but I did think it was interesting. The K-State, Texas Tech. What do you think that line is?
K-State is probably a 7 or 8 point favorite.
7. Yeah. Seems like too many.
So if you find – so Colorado and Colorado State are dumpster fires. But Colorado State is an against-the-spread dumpster. They're 0-4 against the spread. And what the outcome is compared to where the market closed – is 20 points on average.
Whoa.
So, for example, let's say Colorado State's a 12-point underdog. They're getting beat by 32.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're – Jay Norvell, the rebuild's going to take a little bit longer.
Healthy line with Oregon State and Utah, too. Two teams that you think are pretty good. Yeah. And I know some of the shine is off the Beaver, but they played USC tough at home. It's 10.5.
Okay. Go Kyle Whittingham, former candidate for the Nebraska job.
How about Penn State giving the 26.5 to Northwestern? How's Northwestern going to score?
I don't know, but Northwestern's given $1.5 million to Southern Illinois and Miami of Ohio. They're going to give up a lot of points to Penn State.
Yeah, Baylor, less, you know, I don't like this, less than a key number fave hosting Oklahoma State.
Maybe
just 2.5.
Maybe the best person in our picks will pick that game, and he will go
to
4-1.
The best part, you're about to get ran down from behind. Lady Luck is not going to continue to be on your side.
I'm just, you got to play smart. You got to look at everything. You got to put it into the old computer, spit it out.
You keep giving away all your money to that service, and they'll eventually fail you.
No, I haven't done a service. I just do, you know, a naturel. I don't need a service. This is what you're looking at. You get 26 past the hour. Sharp Betting in the Morning at 1620 The Zone.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.